Welcome back to In Search of Tarot, a podcast that examines, questions, and reimagines our approach to life and the cards.
Through guest interviews and in-depth discussions, we'll explore and expand the beautiful complexities of spirituality, philosophy, magic, and more.
I'm Nick.
And I'm Angie.
And we're your hosts for this fascinating ride.
Thanks for being here with us.
Hi, everybody. Today's episode features a conversation that I had with Shannon Knight on her podcast, The Tarot Diagnosis. And some of you might remember from a couple of seasons ago, I had Shannon and her then co-host Luna on to speak with me about their work on The Tarot Diagnosis. And Shannon, a couple of weeks ago, asked me to pop back on. She is now the solo host of that podcast. And she asked me to come on and chat with her about the magician and the quote-unquote sense of self that we kind of develop through a Western ontology and sort of examining and questioning what it is to even be a self and if that's even possible. It's a great conversation, and it was so great that I asked Shannon if I could play it for you all over here on In Search of Tarot as well. So let me introduce you to Shannon by way of her bio. Shannon Knight, she, her, is a queer therapist licensed in both Arizona and Florida, where she specializes in working with individuals and couples. Shannon received her BA in Applied Clinical Psychology from the Florida Institute of Technology and her MS in Mental Health Counseling from Johns Hopkins University. Shannon currently resides in Arizona, and when she needs to escape the heat, she's traveling to find mountains and cooler weather with her partner and her dog, Barley. She feels highly aligned with the Queen of Swords and is constantly trying to deconstruct her perceptions of temperance and the sun, which I definitely can relate to, Shannon. So enjoy this conversation. Next week, I will be bringing you the fourth and final for this season guest co-host episode, which will feature guest co-host Maria Menes in conversation with Sarah Aranza of Hawthorne Mountain Tarot. So look forward to that. Enjoy today's conversation with Shannon, and thanks for being here.
Hi, Nick.
Hi, Shannon.
I am so excited to talk to you today. I adore your podcast, In Search of Tarot. And I just feel, I told you this on Instagram the other day, but I just feel like inspired by your brain. I love your brain. I love how you view tarot in the world and interpret it. So I'm just really grateful that you agreed to hang out with me today and have a conversation on the podcast.
Well, likewise. And, you know, I had you and Luna on, I guess it was over a year now, like a year and a half ago or so, and loved that conversation and have loved your podcast for a very long time, particularly your approach, which, you know, I don't have the background that you have in psychotherapy. And, you know, so it's interesting to hear your takes on the cards and working with the cards. And yeah, I'm really excited to be here and chat with you.
Yeah, you know, and I just also want to say thank you because you'll be the first person that I'm talking to, like, yeah, post big podcast change. And honestly, you were the first person I wanted to talk to because I really do love your podcast. And I really hope, I tell everyone about it when we're talking about tarot. I'm like, you have to listen to Nick. They're amazing. And I just, you have such a calming presence too, and you just seem like you have this wealth of knowledge. And that was just exactly kind of like what I felt like I needed right now, this calm, nerdy approach to tarot. And I was like, and I mean nerdy lovingly.
Yeah.
And I was like, Nick's the one. So when you were like, yeah, let's hop on and do this, I was like, oh my gosh, really? Like, you can do that like right now? So I'm glad it all worked out.
Well, I will try to live up to all of that. Thank you so much. I can definitely live up to the nerd part. And as far as the knowledge, we'll see. But yeah, thank you so much.
No, I trust you. So I had this idea to talk about the magician. And it's funny because, and I don't think I told you this yet, but the reason I even had this idea to explore beyond the self with the magician was because I was working with Somnia Tarot like a week or so ago, and I had pulled the magician like twice. And I was sitting there looking at the image, and it's very different than the traditional image. Nicholas Bruno, the creator of the deck, has the magician figure has his back to us, and they have all their like elemental tools around them, and they're about to walk up this staircase into the fog. And I had this kind of reaction where I was like, this feels really insular, but also moving away from that insularity, because, you know, they're in this dark and dingy cellar, they have their tools, but they're moving out of this tight, close quarters and into dense fog, but it could be anywhere. And I was like, you know, I feel like when we talk about the magician, it's usually, oh, we can manifest our desires and create our own reality. We have the tools, but it felt so and always feels really singular. I mean, I personally like enjoy the independence of that. I think it's great. I'm constantly trying to empower my clients or even just other people in my life. And I think that sense of empowerment exists within the magician. But I also feel like there's this layer of maybe us doing a disservice by not talking about how the magician got to that place of independence or the layers behind that. So I was excited to explore that with you.
Yeah, it's interesting. I feel like this was really meant to be that you chose this topic, because in preparation for this conference that I'm about to host, I have been rereading a lot of different like queer theory texts and things that have kind of inspired me over the years and have kind of led to this conference. And one of those texts that I've been rereading is Sophie Strand's The Flowering Wand. If you're not familiar with Sophie, anyone who's listening, please familiarize yourself, because Sophie's just an incredible like thinker and ecologist and poet and amazing writer. And I feel like Sophie, you know, I've had Sophie on my podcast a couple of times now, and I've been following Sophie's work for a long time. And I feel that something finally clicked that I feel like Sophie has tried to tell me so many different times, which is when you're talking about like queerness, that it can be really easy to get locked into the like anthropomorphization of like queerness and the intellectualization of queerness, where you're just kind of thinking about the idea of being queer and not about the like physical reality, you know? And I believe, I mean, and this is scientific, like I believe that the world is just fundamentally queer and our bodies are fundamentally queer. Like if you look at like our gut biome and just like nature and even different animals, you know, like, I mean, it's queerness is just everywhere. And so we don't have to intellectualize what it is to be queer. We can just like exist as queer, you know? And so I was thinking about that, like with the magician, because I was like, you know, on the one hand, as you said, a lot of times people will talk about this idea of the magician as being like a manifester, as sort of like, sort of having an element of ego is something I'll hear a lot of times. People say that there's like, it's like your desire to create something, but that's kind of through a very like esoteric kind of lens. And I mean, that's where these teachings are really stemming from. A lot of times the most kind of regurgitated teachings on the tarot are coming from that Golden Dawn Smith Rider-Waite lineage, you know? So it's a very particular white Western esoteric view on what it is to like manifest and create, you know, through magic, you know, quote unquote. But like, I was thinking about the magician card and how the magician has all the four, you know, elements, and maybe instead of the magician trying to like make something happen with those, maybe the magician could be a figure that is just very deeply connected to those, you know, like maybe the magician's magic is coming from its deep, deep, non-intellectualized sense of those elements, you know, that it's really feeling those things and living those things and embodying those things, you know, as just a different approach to thinking about the magician.
Oh, that's so beautiful. And really like what I feel like I've been missing, or maybe what is missing from the magician in general. I love that idea of almost the somatization of the magician, because I'm someone who is constantly over-intellectualizing. I'm very analytical, and it's really difficult for me to just kind of like enter into my body. Mm-hmm. And that's a lot of what it sounds like you're saying that can happen when you take a step back and start analyzing the elements for how they are energies within us, not necessarily how they are external forces that can be used to quote unquote manifest something. And that makes me think of how when I was reflecting on the magician, all of these elements and tools that kind of make up our ability to exist as a human come to us from something, from someone, and we don't often give that enough credit. I've been thinking a lot about like epigenetics, for example, and how, you know, the experiences that we have now or the thoughts that we have or some of the anxieties where we can't find the root cause of tend to stem from things that happened deep in our generational past and history that we have like no connection to, mm-hmm. but has been transferred to us throughout evolution. And I was thinking about that in terms of the energies that exist within all the elements of the tools that the magician has that we don't give them credit for. Like, where did we learn how to use the cups or the wands or the pentacles or the swords? And where can we find strength in those that don't make us feel like we have to figure it out all on our own?
Mm-hmm. I love that. One of my favorite exercises when I teach tarot is to look at what's missing in the card or like what we can't see, you know? Like, so I think that's a great example of that. Like, where did those tools come from? Like, has the magician had them for a long time, or did they just walk in and discover them sitting there right. on that table? And do they even know what to do with them? How do they know what to do with them? And like you're saying, I mean, it actually is a perfect sort of metaphor or analogy for what I feel like the experience of learning tarot can be, you know, because like, again, like I was saying, there's a certain lineage that a lot of tarot thinking and teaching comes through that doesn't even often get named, you know, or clarified when people are learning the cards. And so that's a great example. Like, where did these thoughts around these cards stem from? Where are these teaching, you know, who says that the suit of, you know, wands is fire and swords is air? Like, where is that coming from? And then do you agree, you know, like, has anyone ever told you that you get to decide, you know, has anyone ever told that magician that they get to pick how they're going to work with those elements or, you know, what they want to believe about those elements or, you know, all of that.
You know, now that we're really kind of getting into some of the symbology of it, and I love how you said, you know, what is unseen, and you're asking these questions because there's, in the traditional image, we see this figure holding a candle up to the sky. And I feel like we ignore that a lot. It's seen, it's there, but it's something that maybe a lot of us overlook. So there's also this level of like, well, how much is in front of me that I'm also not paying attention to? Because I feel like with the candle being held to the sky, we're also not often acknowledging that it's burning from both ends. Mm-hmm. And when we think about the magician, there's this, again, going back to almost this pressure where it's like, okay, I have all these things. Also, like they've been passed down to me. So now there's this pressure to use these things in the way that they have been used for, you know, the time before me. And maybe I want to use them differently, or maybe I want to get rid of some altogether. And now this person's got a little bit of overwhelm and exhaustion, and the candle burning at both ends makes me think of that. And using up like all this energy that we have and trying to figure out, well, now where do I go? And I feel like all of us reach some point where we need help from others. And instead of feeling like we have to sit in front of this altar and figure out how to organize these elements and use them and live up to maybe the expectation we have of them or the expectation other people have of us using them can be really isolating, which goes back to my original thought of feeling like the Somnia Tarot's depiction of it was really insular. I'm curious about what your thoughts are on that. You saying, you know, what is it that we're not seeing made me realize, wait, there's this component that's here that we see, but we also often ignore.
Yeah. Well, I'm wondering for you coming from a therapeutic background, I wonder how you feel about the pathologizing that can happen in therapy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And this is something that I'm thinking a lot about. One of the teachers at the conference is going to be teaching narrative therapy. you know, that approach? Are you, do mm-hmm. you, are you familiar with that approach, or do you work with that approach in any way?
Yeah, it's actually one of my main modalities.
Oh, amazing. Okay. Yeah. So, you know, so I've just been thinking about the, even the idea. So, you know, this idea of one, you know, which we often kind of look at with the magician and like coming out of zero into one. So like out of formlessness into form, you know, mm-hmm. and again, this idea with those elements as if we ever could be one form, like we just, there is no one really, you know, like we are many, even as we are one. And I like that because I don't know if you are familiar or work at all with Mary Kay Greer's like constellation approach with the cards, but yeah. So you can kind of look at the magician and you can also look at Wheel of Fortune, you know, being one and zero, one plus zero being one. And then the sun card, which 1 + 9 is 10 and 1 + 0 is 1. So that's kind of the constellation that you can kind of, you know, look at. And I feel like, especially with Wheel of Fortune, I always picture Wheel of Fortune as like, what used to be the Gnostic symbol for the monad, which was like a dot with a circle around it. And so there's this feeling of being both one and all simultaneously, you know, though if Wheel of Fortune is kind of, you know, the outside force kind of taking control and you not being in the center of the story anymore, then I think that's a really interesting, you know, place to be. And in this idea of like marginal thinking, which, you know, sorry to keep pointing back to the conference, is just all that I'm thinking about right now.
Yeah, of course. Makes sense.
Yeah. I've been also kind of thinking about the teachings around the center that do happen in a lot of different spiritual and religious traditions, such as I'm reading a book right now on Cherokee cosmology. And they're saying that sort of wherever, like that the center is the most sacred, you know, the most holy of places. And so then, you know, because I'm always loving this idea of the margin, which, you know, is kind of maybe that outer circle, what is it like to be marginal, but also simultaneously the center at the same time? You know, like we're a speck of dust and we're the universe, you know, all at once. I feel like I just went on a huge tangent, but like all that to say that just, you know, individuality and the pathologizing is what I started, you know, to talk about, like, you know, the idea that you could really ever be whole or healed, you know, or
all
singular, yeah, or yeah. All is seems dangerous to me, or seems not the full picture, you know, to me. So I just really am loving like this light bulb moment of like, but the magician is not alone. Like they are right. they are not singular. They are not just standing there by themselves. They have tools and they understand that they need these tools. They need other things, you know.
Yeah, you know, and I love this. You painted a beautiful picture of like the margin and the center, because I'm thinking, how often do we allow ourselves to step in and out of and exist within the fluidity of maybe being able to use these elements that are available to us very, very well? Mm-hmm. And then maybe step out and away from the center and allow other people to step in and show us how to use other elements differently, or mm-hmm. give us different ways and experience to use these. So even though the elements and the tools belong to us, we're giving space for other people to show us different ways of being. Mm-hmm. So even though, you know, our life and our experience belongs to us, and the image of the magician is this very, very kind of independent solo card, we don't give it enough credit and say, well, hold on, we have the ability to manifest and create and have these beautiful moments of being able to exist the way that we want to or need to because of maybe the community that we belong to, or the people that we're willing to read from or learn from. And it's not just solely how we know how to use the tools or the elements, but
or what if the magic or the magician is actually the relationship? Ooh. You know, what if the magician is the relationship between the human and the elements and everything, you know, that it's not, because I was thinking, you know, that it could be the agency of the elements themselves working on the magician. It could be the agency of the magician working on the elements, but really it's the relationship of all of those things, you know, interrelating and interconnecting, you know?
I love that you use the word relationship. And I feel like it took me back to you using the word pathologize a moment ago. And I feel like I kind of like glossed over that. But you are so right, because I think another component here, and this is, again, just the lens through which I'm viewing the cards. I view it through this like psychological, psychotherapeutic lens. But I feel like now there's also this component of maybe the relationship is really rigid or too fluid, where rigid would be it's painful or difficult to ask for assistance in using the elements, or to be curious about how the elements can be used by reading other people's experiences or bringing the community in to show you new ways of utilizing them. Mm-hmm. So we feel like we're supposed to have all the answers and automatically know how to use these tools. And so it becomes too vulnerable to say, oh, maybe I've reached the point where I can do all I can do with this, so I can't let anybody know that I don't know how to use the wand anymore. Like, I've reached the like threshold of what I can do with the wand. Mm-hmm. Whereas I think maybe a flip side to that too is not necessarily trusting your full abilities or potential and relying too much on others and saying, well, I can't use this or can't explore this part of my ability unless I hear someone else's viewpoint or their experience or how they tell me to use it.
Yeah.
I feel like you just totally opened that door for me.
Yeah, I love that. And I love thinking about exactly what you said, like who, like what made you feel that you needed to kind of separate it out, you know, like, because in looking at it in that way, what I like about that approach is that a natural evolution from there is two, you know, and it's like, so maybe that's where this need to create a binary framework stems from, is that something outside convinces us in some way that we have to like sever ourselves, you know, that it's not that the relationship and the interrelationship is not enough, that it has to be more systematized or compartmentalized or like clarified in some way. And so we have to kind of detach and like create these binaries of like the magician and the tool, you know, or fire and water, or these separate, you know, everything kind of separating out. And I really love, I'm very much in love with the trio of like 1, 2, 3, because something that I have been thinking about lately is, and this is written about in, I'm forgetting the name of the book right now, but it's a book about, it's actually about the Holy Trinity in Christian thinking, but it's this idea that there really can't be, that in the moment there's two, there's automatically three, because there's something that is distinguishing one and two. Mm-hmm. But more than that, there's a third thing that arises from one and two, you know? And that's where I think, you know, people get kind of confused, I think, with talking about non-binary ways of being, is when we're talking about a third thing, like a third category of non-binary, we're not talking about, you know, like masculine, feminine in terms of sort of like water and oil, where they don't really mix. They're just kind of together, but they're maintaining like a separateness. We're really talking about like a third thing, a whole different ball game, you know, that, you know, may contain elements, but is not, it's totally different. It's not just like a holding of two together. But it's interesting to think about the magician as like the starting point of that as card one. And it's like, why, like, that's another thing I like to think about when I teach, is what is the transition between these two cards? Like, what happens that takes us from this card into that card? So like, what is it that takes us from one into two, you know, is really interesting.
Yeah, I feel like you could even apply that same idea to what takes us into the element of the cup, to the wand, to the sword, to the pentacle, to even the candle being held to the sky within the image of the magician. And actually, like, hearing you talk about the binary, and really it sounded also what you were referring to could also be all or nothing thinking. And now my brain went to, and it could be because we were talking about this in the book club in the symposium the other day, but we were talking about the Six of Pentacles, and we were really unwrapping that card through Rachel Pollack's lens. And I feel like what you just described with there being a third, that's where my brain immediately went, because you have these two people on the ground who are referred to as like the beggars or the receivers. And then you have this person who's standing above them holding a scale who would be the giver. But it's interesting in Rachel's interpretation and the way that we had a discussion on this card is the giver is basically so in tune with the feelings and the needs of those around them that they find it difficult or uncomfortable to explore their own needs and feelings. Mm-hmm. So basically then it's, well, I have the resources and the ability, so I should be utilizing them or giving them away, or I should just know what to do with them. And that goes back to that binary and all or nothing thinking too, where it's like, it doesn't have to just be this way or this way. You can also have a conversation and engage in some sort of dialogue or thought process where it's like, well, hold on, how can all of these things kind of coexist and swirl around together in order to create something that is beyond just what you are giving or holding or what's present in the magician?
Yeah. And I'm just thinking again about like one and zero, you know, and going from the Fool zero into one, and then looking at the Wheel of Fortune as card 10, and just thinking about, you know, this journey of like zero as being really what I think of as being a marginal energy, which is chaos could be another word for that, you know, or rupture or deconstruction or liminality or paradox, yes, or, you know, just questioning, just a space of very much liminal kind of melting away of any kind of distinguishable characteristics, you know. So a pretty difficult space to be in mentally for those of us, mm-hmm, who grew up in our sort of Western American, you know, ontology. But something I've thought about a lot this year is realizing that as a queer person, especially, that's actually where like I want to be, you know, like I actually want to be melting away and like kind of coming out of form and being non-describable, you know, but I need to give myself some grace in that because the world that we live in requires us to be in form and to be legible and to be visible and to be nameable, you know, and understandable to not ourselves. It doesn't matter if we understand ourselves necessarily, others have to understand us, you know, others have to see us and we have to be legible for other people. So that's the tension, I think, between zero and one. And so then in this Wheel of Fortune moment, it's how do you hold both? You know, how do you maintain some sense of solidity because it's necessary in the world to just function and survive, while also knowing that the margin or the liminal zero space is as close as we can get to truth as we can. I don't believe in any kind of like subjective truth, but like, right, you know, if we're going to try to inch towards whatever that is, like that is zero to me, you know, and the relationship between form and formlessness is like one and zero, you know?
It's interesting where you're going, especially because, and I didn't do this purposely, but last week I talked about the Fool and I did focus a lot on liminality. And it just so happens that you and I was like, hey, I really want to talk about the magician. Mm-hmm. It just so happens that, you know, it's kind of like going in this sequence. So I love what you're doing in terms of talking about of like the numerology of it and this formlessness, because an example I gave in last week's episode about the Fool and liminality is, I love garden metaphors and nature metaphors. So I talked about that phase where, you know, a butterfly has kind of just emerged from its cocoon, but its wings aren't totally formed. And it has to grab a hold of something and wait. And that waiting period is often the liminality stage where you are not nothing, but you're also not quite what you are wanting to be yet. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of patience that is required to just exist in that space and a lot of vulnerability. And we often have to ask for help and we can't necessarily do it alone, which, mm-hmm, I think is what I get hung up on with the magician, where it feels like, oh, you're just supposed to figure it out. You're just supposed to know how to do it. And with the example of the liminality and the butterfly, they have to grab a hold of something in order to steady themselves so that their wings do have an opportunity to develop so then that they can fly away on their own. And, you know, that's usually like a plant stem or whatever, something that is some sort of object. But with the magician, it doesn't necessarily have to be these objects. Like these, what if we looked at these elements as people and as community? Who, mm-hmm, in your life is the wand? Who in your life is the cup, the sword, the pentacle? Or what communities are those? And how can we say, hey, I'm in this space and I want to flow into your space for a moment? Because, you know, I think when we deny that ourselves that experience, we're also then denying ourselves connection with another human. And then we're also denying that community or that person an opportunity to shine or even strengthen their own tools. Because if you think about it, we learn by teaching. That's usually how it goes. Like, we become really proficient in something once we are talking about it to other people. So to see the magician standing there all alone, like, who are they talking to? Like, who are they exploring things with? Who are they allowing themselves to go into this liminal space with?
I love that invitation. I think that's so important for our world right now. You know, like, I think it's the last thing we need is to like be more insular, you know? Right. And also it's interesting because even if we are kind of going with this, you know, esoteric teaching of like as above, so below, for instance, which is often talked about with the magician. Mm-hmm. I mean, that phrase is stemming from an acknowledgement of our interconnection, like with the universe, yeah. You know, as above, so below, and also as below, so above, that there's this, you know, relationship there. So it really is a card about relationship, which I love. I've never thought about it in this way before. So I'm loving this conversation. And also the other day I was at a bar and I happened to be seated by a huge group of women who had just like flown in for a day trip, you know, here in Asheville. And they started to talk about gender reveal parties. And they were like, one of them was saying, you know, oh yeah, well, they, my friend says that, you know, they don't want to, you know, talk about the sex or the gender of the child, you know, till it gets older. And the other one was like, oh my gosh, that's too much. That's just going a step too far. And it's kind of like, okay, well, why is that? But also like, where do we get those ideas? Again, to go back to that, you know? And so it's like, how can we, when we see the magician card, what would it be like to really encounter those tools and objects and elements with as little like previous knowledge as possible, you know, like to really let the magician or the child or, you know, whatever metaphor we're using, step into the world and out of the void of zero and into the form of one with totally fresh eyes, you know, and like, what would they encounter? What would they do? What would they make of that? It could be a whole different story. I mean, really this narrative that often gets told through the tarot could go in a whole different direction, you know, if we really let ourselves encounter that with totally fresh eyes.
I feel like this naturally is going in the direction of acknowledging the infinity symbol above the magician, especially it's a placement above the head. You know, it's not on their torso. It's not on the table. And I feel like this is exactly what you're referring to right now. And it's this indication of our capacity for knowledge and experience if we allow it. And not even just capacity for knowledge and experience regarding who's in front of us currently, but also who came before us and who might come after us, and allowing us to just exist in that space of curiosity and going back to that word liminality.
Yeah, I love that. And I was also thinking about the lens through which we view it. You know, the magician, there's many lenses that we could approach those concepts or those tools or those elements, you know, through, which is really something I love to think about with tarot and talk about with people about tarot too, is, you know, I don't believe that these cards have, you know, one approach. I think that there's infinite ways you can approach all of them. And so really it's about through what lens do I want to approach them? You know, in my own evolution of like learning tarot, I definitely went through this time where I felt this pressure to approach the cards in such a way that I was taking account of like every possible point of view. Mm-hmm. You know, like I was like, I need to be able to just like every card should speak to every person and I should be able to hold space for like anyone and everyone, you know? And then I was like, wait a second, like this is impossible. Like I'm one human being, you know, like, and I have biases and I have, you know, like places where I don't know things. And, you know, so really it's more about like, what is my lens? Like how do I want to approach these cards? And that's, how do I want to approach these cards today? Like in this moment, you know, it doesn't have to always be the same, but I do think the magician is a potential kind of threshold to cross. And that as you leave zero and go into one, maybe you're you're distinguishing your lens. You know, you're saying, okay, I want to come out of formlessness into form through this particular lens for this moment, you know?
Yeah, I really love what you did with that. And it's actually kind of making me go back to the Six of Pentacles again, because I feel like that's what you're describing. Like that's when the scale held by the giver of the Six of Pentacles is truly balanced, when the givers and the receivers are comfortable acknowledging that they have deficits alongside their abilities, and that they are willing to step in, step out. And I wonder now, is the giver the magician? Like, what happens if we put the magician in the giver's spot? Or what happens if we put the magician as one of the receivers down at the bottom? And what is it that they are receiving or allowing themselves to receive in that moment?
Mm-hmm. I love that.
So I feel like we could probably unwrap this archetype for hours. And maybe we can revisit in the future. Hopefully maybe you'll come on and talk with me again. But now I've got this question swirling around in my mind based on what we've talked about. But I feel like maybe that's a good wrap up question. And that's using the word manifest, because that's what we tend to apply to the magician. So what can we manifest, not just on our own, but with the help of others and the wisdom of others, or also if we allow ourselves to step out of our current form and into the formlessness that you were talking about?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think that from, I'll just speak personally, like when I hear that question and that invitation, what I'm interested in, quote unquote, kind of manifesting is my capacity to come out of form. You know, my capacity to acknowledge the fact that there is no me, you know, like that I contain many beings and, you know, literal, not even getting kind of spiritual about it, but just like scientifically, that a lot of different beings inhabit me, a lot of elements make me up, you know, and if there is no me, there is no singular, you know, me. So that, I think, and like I said earlier, that is a pretty much impossible thing to like move through the world with consistent awareness of, you know, but my trying to manifest my capacity to acknowledge that and feel comfortable with that and humbled by that. And it is really challenging. I mean, the reason I'm thinking in these ways so much, I have to credit my teacher, Leah Garza. I'm in her year-long container living systems. And it's a course on decoloniality. And it's really blowing my mind and blowing the way I think about things. And this, even this idea of ontology. And there's a teaching that says there are many worlds in this one world that the Zapatistas say. And, you know, that's really hard to hold, that at every turn, something that you really believe to be true and fundamental could be completely at odds with the way another person, another place and time believes, you know, and getting comfortable with the acknowledgement of that and the sort of liminality of your own, you know, truths, quote unquote, and the ability to lean in and decide, okay, I can acknowledge on the one hand that there are many worlds in this one world, but in my world, this is very important to me, you know, and I am going to choose to kind of really lean into this. I am going to choose to pick up this tool, you know, and come into form in this way, knowing simultaneously that someone else could do it in a different way. And that's very hard, you know?
I feel like your answer was so beautiful, and it's such a wonderful depiction of how I approach narrative therapy and going throwback to that from earlier. But I feel like now I'm looking, and this is a whole other episode, the magician as a storyteller, and all of these stories and the stories that belong to us because they belong to people, other people before us, or the people that we're encountering now. So thank you so much for sharing that. And thank you for hanging out with me today. Seriously, means so much to me that you came on here.
Thank you for going on that just wild ride in like 40 minutes with me. I feel like not everyone is comfortable like surfing the ocean of thoughts in that way. And you were, and like, I love that. So I really appreciate that.
In Search of Tarot is independently written, recorded, edited, and transcribed by Nick Kepley and Angie Miller. You can follow Angie on Instagram at birdgirl_, that's BIRDGERHL_. And you can follow me, Nick, on Instagram at In Search of Tarot. Have a question or a comment? Email us at isotpod@gmail.com. We also invite you to leave us a rating and review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts.